It's after 1:00. It is 1:10 PM, February the 6th, 2012. We are calling to order the quarterly meeting for the City of Ocala Firefighters Retirement Plan.
Do we have a quorum?
We do have a quorum. I spoke with Mr. Williams, and he is in a class up at the Florida State Fire College this week, and he said that Monday is the first day of the class, it's a Monday through Friday class, and he didn't know his instructor, and he didn't know if he was going to allow him to break free to get to the meeting. I told him that if he was going to miss a meeting, this would be one of the better ones to miss, because our agenda is not, pretty minimal, actually. So I don't know if he'll show up or not, but other than that, all other board members are present. First thing on the agenda is to approve the minutes. Everybody should have gotten email copies and been able to go through them. So at this point, I would like to entertain a motion.
So moved.
Motion by Larry Fagan, second by Fred Stark. Is there any opposition to a unanimous approval?
I don't have an opposition, I have a request.
Yes.
Is that appropriate time? I know this is probably hard for Alicia, but I was hoping maybe we could start getting minutes a little sooner, like maybe within 4 weeks of the meeting. Would that be possible?
Yes.
Because I forget, you know, you forget what you say after 3 months, and so it's kind of hard. If we could do it maybe within the same month or something, that'd be good.
I concur. It would be much easier if we got them right after the minute, right after the meeting, and that way we're not rushing at the last minute also. Okay, no opposition to a unanimous approval? Seeing, hearing none, the motion carries. Okay, I would like to also, next on the agenda is the accounts payable. They have been passed around.
I'm sorry, I haven't seen.
This actuarial thing, is that a quarterly fee?
No, it depends on, what quarter, because they do a lot more work. Right now, they're finalizing the actuarial report, so I...
That is
the final.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so that's the...
That's what we're being billed for.
That's what we're being billed for. That's only a once-a-year fee.
Yeah. What, is that all we pay them the whole year?
No, because sometimes we have other issues, like we did last year, we did the experience study.
Okay.
So we paid him for the experience study, but that's pretty much it. And then if we were to, well, right now, we're in negotiations, and if there are going to be any changes to the plan, he will do the actuarial impact statement. We assist the city and the labor union in their negotiating. If the labor union says we want to put a 1% COLA into the plan, how much would it cost? Then we would direct the actuary to give us a cost analysis of how much it would cost for a 1% COLA, or if we wanted to raise the multiplier, or any kind of change to the plan that is going to have financial impact, it would go through our actuary, and that would be an additional fee. But typically, we only negotiate every 3 years, so that's an every... And we don't always change. I mean, for the last, I don't think we've made a pension change in probably 8 or 9 years, we have not had a pension change. So, but those are other circumstances in which the actuary would be...
When a pension recipient dies, what percentage of his pension does the wife get?
It depends on what option he chose. We have numerous options that you can choose.
Yeah.
We have a life annuity, which she would get nothing if he chose the life annuity.
Mm-hmm.
We have the 10-year certain in life with 50% to the spouse. So if he dies after 10 years of retiring, then she would get 50%. If it's before 10 years, then she would get the full amount for the remainder of the 120 payments.
What do most of them take?
All different. Most of the single people take the life annuity.
Yeah.
some people take, and then we have the joint survivor, which is 100%, and that can be, can cost them $300 or $400 a month, but the wife would continue to collect 100% of the pension for the rest of her life. So it all depends on what.
Can they change those?
You're allowed to change once, I believe, but I'm not positive on that. We've never had anybody change theirs once they retire. But I do believe the state law allows, not, they can't change their option. Take that back. They cannot, once you choose one of the options, whether it's the life annuity or the...
The same in the military.
You cannot, you can change your beneficiary, but you cannot change your option.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, then, if you want to go ahead and look through those, we'll pass those around and remind me I need to...
Students?
To get a motion before the meeting ends for the accounts payable. So with that, I guess now we're to the quarterly report, and I will turn the floor over to Dave.
Okay. I think I can also be pretty brief today. There has been an awful lot of significant, well, actually, I guess we can roll it into one very significant event that happened in Europe while we were all on our holiday and celebrating the new year. But since we last met, the European Financial Group got together and actually empowered the ECB, which is European Central Bank, and they empowered the ESFF, which is the, kind of think of that as the equivalent of the U.S. Treasury, but it's a U.S. Treasury for all of the European, you know, participating countries. And this is very significant because, as everyone I think was aware, we were rapidly headed to a liquidity crisis in that no one wanted to touch Greek debt, obviously Spanish debt, Italian debt, and this thing was snowballing down, and we were headed potentially for the type of market lockup like we had here in 2008 when no one would transact anything. And essentially what happened is they empowered the ECB and the SFF, which meant that they were able to go out and raise money. They received, you know, funds and pledge and backing, essentially a pledge from Germany, France, and major supporting countries. But they were also able to go public and borrow and essentially issue billions of dollars of euros and then exchange that debt with the European banks that are holding all of the sovereign debt, and with a lot of the and are also able to use that money to provide a temporary bailout for Spain and Italy. Ireland was a big user. You know, all of those entities basically had a problem. They had a debt, you know, they had a bond coming due, and they got to roll that note back out, but they can't because interest rates are too high and the market didn't want to buy it. So that's where we were headed for this crisis. But fortunately, they were empowered. This was a huge event. I think it was grossly underreported. But what that meant, you know, the Europeans have successfully, I think, averted a liquidity crisis. They haven't fixed the problem, but they've averted, you know, the lockup crisis. So, you know, markets breathed, I think, a little bit of a sigh of relief over that. Obviously, we'll continue to monitor, you know, what progress they make in fixing the problems they have over there. But, you know, in the meantime, they averted a lockup here domestically. And actually, most recently, the employment figures are improving, albeit modestly. But the most recent employment report that came out last week was pretty positive. And I don't know if you've been hearing the stories about the auto industry. Ford added a third shift, and a number of the automakers are you know, starting to ramp up. Manufacturing as a whole, looking at the various indicators out there in the U.S., seems to be, you know, slowly picking up, and there's some indications, depending upon which economist or statistician, I guess, you follow, that, you know, housing around here may have stabilized for the time being. But all in, you know, the signs of modest economic growth are out there. So as a result of that, you know, we had a huge rally in the equity markets in October. November and December, equity markets trailed off, but we continued to have people willing to step up and buy the riskier assets. When we look at the global bond strategy, you know, the lower quality, the non-U.S. Treasury debt continued to have a nice rally as investors, you know, went back into that, looking for that extra yield and income. So all in, you know, we're looking at a nice absolute rate of return quarter here. So just quickly running down the summary, if you go to page 2, and if you follow with me on the top right, you can see our international equity benchmarks there. The developed country average stock was up 3.4%, and remember the dollar was still appreciating, so we left some money on the table because our investment in a foreign currency, we lost money in that currency position. Domestically, the S&P 500 average stock was up 11.8%, and the small cap stocks actually did very well, and that's one thing that stood out as a factor in your portfolio, your small cap index fund. You got that 15.5-ish percent in the portfolio. Hopping down into the green, you know, again, modest returns in bonds, unless you were more invested in the corporate area, particularly down in quality. You see the Barclays corporate IG, that was up 1.9%. And then if you skip all the way up to, skip up to page 8, look at that green bar there shooting across the page. High yield was up 6.5%. You know, investment grade triple B rated bonds were up 2.8%. You know, so that bond market rally for non-U.S. treasuries you know, continued through the quarter. So those are the high points. It looks like most of the cyclical names in the equity market started to come back into favor. Financials continue to do their crazy bounce, you know, 1 month they're in, 1 month they're out. But the consumer sensitive areas and cyclically sensitive of the areas, as you might expect, if investors are looking at a gradually improving economy, pretty much led the markets. So let's take a look at the results. Let's do dollars first and go to page 18. And this is our cash flow reconciliation for the quarter. If you follow with me on the bottom shaded line there, we opened up with $29,588,896. We had contributions, and that would be both member contributions, city contributions, $651,980. The pensioner distributions totaled $432,000. Fees, and these would be investment management fees deducted from the custodial statement, $6,861. Any other line item expenses totaled $4,565. The investment earnings are broken down into income. The plan earned from stocks and dividends, coupons and dividends, $223,824. The appreciation number was $1,672,916. So we added a little bit shy of $2 million from investments to the pool. So when we took the snapshot 12/31, we're at $31,694,190. Now, I think as everyone's aware, in January, markets continue to have a fairly positive tone to them. So, you know, we're continuing to track gains through this quarter. So hopefully we continue on that type of trajectory. If you look at page 20.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Question. These earnings of $221,000, that's a quarter, right?
Right.
So $31 million, we're earning $800,000 a year, is that correct, roughly?
Income a year, right.
Yeah. So that means most of our stuff is invested in things that just don't pay very much, is that right?
It's mixed. If you, to answer that question, why don't we turn to the allocation pie chart on page, let's go to page 13 maybe, or 12, either 12 or 13. If you take a look at the equity allocation, well, let's start with the income earners first. The highest income earners are going to be the allocation to real estate, and they're 9.3% of the fund assets in real estate. Half of that is in, half of it is still in the REIT, the equity REIT, which is effectively a dividend yield or dividend payout. The other half of that allocation is American Realty, which is paying the operating income or rental income off of the core real estate investment there. That's your greatest source of income. Next to that would be under the global fixed income. The PIMCO fund is about half of that allocation. That's also paying a very high level of income out, as that is a lower quality type of fund. The Templeton Global Bond, which comprises the other 2%, would probably fall next. Then we have to look to the domestic bond market allocation, and that's 100% in the index fund. So we'll be earning whatever the aggregate bond market coupon and yield is on that.
Is that 1% then?
No, I think it's closer to low threes, 3.5.
Really?
Because that's the full maturity. That's all the way on out to 30-year bonds. So, I think the low threes, we should have that number in there. Low threes is probably a fair estimate for that. And then on the equity side, about half the portfolio is in value-oriented equities. And obviously, as you're aware, the value stocks are generally going to pay a higher dividend, or at least above market dividend, than the growth side of the portfolio. So you've got a good smattering. I think what you're missing, if anything, is additional allocations to the core real estate to get income up, if that's the option, and potentially some high quality, high yield would be another area. We're actually looking at some products in that area, and those would be two additional sources of income that would probably be appropriate for this type of liability here.
And just to clarify, we are trying to get more real estate exposure, but we can only get it as they give it to us. So if there's not deals out there, if there's not what they see as profitable deals, then they're not going to buy them. They're not going to be asking us for money. So we're right now on a wait list.
Right.
And as they find more buildings and so forth, then they ask us for more money. But it's not like something we can throw money at. We have to wait until they want the money.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? So one that's still in pension plans for 30 years, this one is so different than anything I've ever seen before. It's not even funny.
But you weren't in public pensions.
No, that's true.
This is
public
very,
pensions are
very,
totally different.
Yeah.
Example, I have a 401k and I'm mandated to take out X amount of dollars per year based on December 31st,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. But this thing here, I had to do a flow chart on it, and I'd love to see one on it. is here we've got this fund of money, and the employees are putting money into it, and the city's putting money into it, okay?
Correct.
In this fund of money, we've got all these investments, all these mutual funds, and some bonds, and not earning an awful lot, but we're counting about a roughly 6% return, including growth and income, okay? It doesn't really matter, because where we're paying the employees is out of their contributions, and the county contribution. But here's this big hunk of money up here, well, we're really not touching it, right? We're not selling anything off of it, it's just continuing to grow. So the ultimate question on this thing that I have is, assuming the same morbidity rate, the same number of employees, and the same contributions, and a reasonable interest rate, or earnings rate, however you want to call it, at what point down the road, way out from us, are we going to have to jump into that big hunk of money and start drawing money out of it? It's conceivable we'll never have to draw money out of
hopefully.
It. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Hopefully.
It looks like these contributions are going to be enough to pay for it.
Okay. What we would ideally like to do is get the city's contribution down, you know, so it's more affordable for them, which makes it stronger for us. You know, right now the city is contributing a lot of money.
What is going in the fund a year total?
Well, it all depends.
Well, this year, this quarter, for instance, what's going in there?
I don't know, but what happens is each year the actuary looks at the plan,
yeah.
Okay, and he looks at what our investment earnings were, he looks at what our employee contributions were, and he looks at everything coming into the plan and then everything going out of the plan, and then he's got, of course, every member of the plan. He knows, okay, they're going to work 26.3 years, you know, they're going to get a raise of so much per year, there's going to be so much inflation, blah, blah, blah. So in order to have this money for him when he's ready to retire in 12.3 years from now, X amount of money has to be in the pension plan today,
mm-hmm.
assuming that all those other assumptions are correct. So then he does his numbers, and he does his numbers game, and then he comes up with a figure of how much money needs to be in the plan at this on September 30th of, you know, every year.
It's still quite conceivable that we'll never touch the plan.
Well, yeah. I mean, ideally...
You would hope that you...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the
plan... The interest lowers the contribution.
Yeah, the more we can make in investment returns, the lower the more we can bring the city's contribution down.
Well, as the city grows and gets more and more employees, you can be putting more money into it, right?
Yeah, but you're going to be also getting that, and you're going to be getting that additional, those employee contributions.
That's true. So you get more and more money coming into the pot.
Right.
Okay.
So you're going to have more going
this
out.
This is so totally different from a corporate pension plan. It's not even funny.
It's different, but it's...
I was reading that thing that Alicia sent us on the disability. I was stunned to find out if you were a smoker, you couldn't get disability.
Right.
That's
you
really
can't even
wild.
Get hired. You can't even get hired.
You smoke.
You can't even get hired at the fire department if you smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, I can understand.
You have to sign an affidavit stating that you do not, yeah. not only cigarettes, but also chew and all that other stuff. You cannot use tobacco products.
Well, that all goes to the presumptive pool, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's really interesting. Okay.
So, no, I mean, I'm not
allowed
to. Well,
I would love to see a flow chart on this whole thing. I think it'd be interesting to just look at. I'm going to try to make that one out myself.
Okay.
But, yeah, I guess the best starting point would be, looking at the cash flow this quarter, and to your point.
Yeah.
We discussed in the hallway, I mean, the contributions are from member and from the city of 651, pensioner payments 432 right now. So you've got a net positive flow, and then we're adding on to that income from investments, which is giving additional cash flow to help offset expenses. And then as John was pointing out, the target, we're 7.5 target, right?
Three-quarters.
Seven, three-quarters. Target rate of return, so we've got city contributions and employee contributions, investment contributions. So if everything goes to plan, then we are in perfect perpetuity. The city contribution should be absolutely minimum and only paid as scheduled. And the plan continues. Obviously, the problem has been we've been through a rather unique period of time where additional funds had to be made. So that way we can keep the funding ratio. The funding ratio here is very healthy. That way we keep that funded ratio high so that from the actuary's health perspective, the plan is maintaining that asset level. And yeah, we should never have to do it. I mean, the best thing that could happen to this plan, ironically, would be the hiring of additional, especially younger employees, and that just makes
vice versa. If your total employee number went down, that would be adverse to the plan.
Yes.
Yes, to all of our plans, actually.
Yeah.
Our funding ratio, refresh my memory, is it 69%? Does anyone recall?
Well, I don't know the new one coming out, but the old one was right around 68-69%.
Yeah.
When the new actuary study comes out, which you'll see, it will tell us what percent of payroll the city's contributions will be for fiscal year 2013. So the actuary tells the city, based on the actuary, of what we will contribute, and it's 29% now, I think, right now. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be looking at, when that comes out, we use those for our budget numbers to prepare our 2013 budget, based on the percent of payroll and the actuary stuff.
Is our pension plan federally insured?
No.
It would be
Is this under the PBGC?
No, it would be a guarantee. It would be a city government guarantee.
Let's talk about insurance for a minute. Particularly bond market. I have read that only three or four bond insurance companies remain investment grade, and the others are below investment grade, and that bond insurance is no longer as attractive as it once was some years ago. What are your thoughts about the bond insurance market, particularly as it relates to, if it does, our bond holdings?
Yeah, great. That's a great question. And number one, bond insurance would be applicable to municipal bonds. None of the investments, for example, in the investment grade bond universe, none of those investments would carry that layer of insurance. You would only find that applied to municipal bond insurance, municipal bond issuance. So, for example, if the city were to issue a general revenue bond, and the marketplace, the interest rate was a little unattractive. If it was going to cost them, I don't know, 5% to pull a number out of the air. But if we put an insurance wrapper on it, then you could get that cost of funding down to maybe 4, maybe 3.75%.
Mm-hmm.
So it was worth the cost to add the insurance because it lowered your overall funding. But to your point, with the implosion of the rating agencies and the insurers, downgrades of the insurers, that has really become you don't get the benefit anymore. So,
now the alternative to that then would be you had to fund a reserve debt service reserve. You didn't have it, so it keeps you also, the bond insurance keeps you from funding, you know, putting money aside in it, you know, as your own insurance, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the credit enhancer
mm-hmm.
for the issue, plus
yeah,
but keeping the city from having to fund a debt service reserve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what's happened as a result of that is your active managers, and this would really only pertain to the PIMCO fund, okay, have gone out, and municipal bonds have gotten very cheap because the insurance isn't worth anything, or value is hugely diluted. So investors are very concerned about that. So now that interest rate's gone way up, the bonds have gotten very cheap. So your active managers and PIMCO has identified that, and they have actually gone outside their usual world and say, hey, City of Ocala, boy, their GO bonds are really cheap, and they're cheaper than the taxable equivalent bonds here. So we're gonna buy a few of those, and we're gonna buy that type of security and put it in the portfolio. So PIMCO actually has gone out and identified that opportunity and put them in the a small percentage of the total assets. But so they've reacted. So as far as your plan, it really has no impact, except that one of your active managers has identified that as an opportunity, and through that portfolio is participating in some
municipal. Biggest problem with bonds is the callability. Half my municipal bonds have been called.
And we do that too. When we have the opportunity to call, we have a bond issue that's out. It's callable 10-1. It's for about $8 million, but we can refund that and get about a 10% net present value savings. Anytime you get between 3% and 5% might be something to look into. And so those features give us the opportunity to call those bonds, refund them, and save a little bit of money.
What spread do you use to call them?
These are called at par, the ones we've issued. Oh. Call at par.
Good. That's really a question. Okay. Any other discussion on that? Okay. Let's just to hit some of the high points here.
Before we go on that, you said PIMCO is the one that's taken advantage of this. Mm-hmm. And if you look at PIMCO's returns this quarter, they were in the fourth percentile, page 22. They were, and they made nearly 4%. So they were in the fourth percentile of all diversified income funds. Their benchmark is the Bank of America Merrill Lynch Global Broad Market Index, which made only 0.32%, and PIMCO made 3.97%. So that's one area where active management, instead of just buying the index, Merrill Lynch Broad Market Index, that's one aspect of where it's really paid off.
Yeah, and I think this program's decision to, obviously you're limiting your active management, but the areas where you have applied active management are arguably the most opportunistic, and with PIMCO and Templeton. And, happily, both of those funds did very well. Templeton, again, as we've talked about before, is heavily impacted by currency. And, the dollar has still retained some of its strength relative to the other foreign issuers that Templeton is in. But the PIMCO Diversified Income Fund, again, is probably the most opportunistic in taking advantage of credit opportunity like the municipals.
What bond ratings do they buy?
They're limited. We have our investment policy limits them as to, they have to be investable and investment grade, right?
Well, actually, the way we had set it up was just to refresh it, any individual or any security held by the fund would have to be investment grade. However, we can participate in other commingled funds, mutual funds, that allow for investment in sub-investment grade. We wrote that into the policy. But obviously, we've limited the amount that we can do that in the investment policy. In the case of PIMCO, I believe the average, weighted average credit quality of that portfolio right now, it would be BA.
Okay.
So it's just below investment grade average quality. But it would be considered high quality, high yield, I guess. So that's where they're getting this incremental income. And, you know, again, our funding experience for this fund was, the timing couldn't have been worse, unfortunately, because that was the September quarter, right, when we had that huge flight to quality, the sky was falling again, and everybody bought U.S. Treasury, so everything else got blown out. But obviously, this quarter, we had a huge turnaround in that, and things are proceeding more normally. That was one of the high points I wanted to bring out, so thanks for identifying that. The other, the real estate allocation, just on page 27. I'm on the wrong. Jump to the back section.
Okay. Maybe 23.
Yeah, let's go to page 23. The real estate allocation was pretty strong, and the American Core Realty Fund is clipping off, you know, just under 3% a quarter. So look at that year-over-year number. American Core Realty is up at 14.68%. Let's call it 15%. You know, on an annualized basis, and that's been a very steady quarterly contribution. The Invesco Global Real Estate, and again, our long-term objective here is to wean off of that, because that's the equity, that's the REIT fund. So those are equities, and get into more of the American Realty type core real estate. But that did very well. Those equities rallied during the quarter, so that fund was up 8.6%. And then the other highlights, I think, really, the detractors were international, largely for currency issues, but your active domestic equity portfolio finished, you know, in and around pretty close to the benchmark for the period. So your other, as I said in the introductory comments, the other 21, the other big contributor on page 21, was your allocation to small cap. And that index, as we indicated, was up 15.05%. So that was the best performing sector. And with your fixed allocation to that sector, obviously you were able to capture everything less the nominal index fee for that.
This money that we don't spend for expenses and for retirement plans, where does it say how much that is a month that we're putting into these funds? What page is that on?
That's more in the banking. Wouldn't that be more in the banking?
What are you talking about? I'm sure I'm not following. Could you repeat that question?
Well, other than the money we're spending for retirees,
yes,
and our expenses,
yes,
we've got some money left over, right?
Right.
So the net amount. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do we put that on a monthly basis? And if so, how much is it?
I see. So, yeah, I mean,
yes,
we go into
the city's
bank account,
yeah,
and earns interest. And
every
then
2 weeks we get paid.
Yeah.
Our employee contributions go into the fund, and the city contributes on a bi-weekly basis also, right?
Yes.
So on a bi-weekly basis, all this money is going in, and it's being, you know, said that there's so much kept in cash because we have to make our monthly pension payments, and then our regular bills, you know, to the attorneys and actuaries and everybody else. And then all the rest of that money goes and gets invested. Right.
How much is it? Do you know?
No. It's different. It's different every month. It depends, you know, how much money, how much our investment earnings were. If our investment earnings were higher, then of course there's more money going in. If our investment earnings were lower, then there's less money going in.
Yeah, the money, remember, the money going in is a percentage of payroll. So, you know, a week where there's some overtime or something like that, then the contributions would be higher if we had, you know, during holidays and that, we have overtime.
Right.
So it's based on percentage of payroll.
Well, is it half the money we're bringing in, or three-fourths, or what? A fourth?
There's not always a net positive.
Really?
Also, depends on who's leaving and when they're leaving. We can pay out a couple lump sums or refunds of contributions.
Yeah, if somebody works here for 8 years and they quit, you know, they may have put in $40,000 into the plan, and when they leave, they take their contributions with them.
Hmm. Unless you're Chief Williams and don't stay 10 years.
I'll leave that one alone.
Interesting.
Probably a good thing.
Huh?
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that would have happened in our plan, because that just really, really helped that plan a lot, actuarially.
Yeah, well,
he got his contributions back, but he's not getting any
benefits. His contribution, I mean, would it though, if his contributions are that high, that he's getting back, doesn't that also hurt the plan?
No. Because all those liabilities for that are also gone.
City's contribution are gone.
City's contributions stay in the plan.
Any earnings?
All the earnings stay in the plan.
Yeah. All the earnings from his part?
Gets, huh?
Not all the earnings from his part.
From his part, yes.
His part earnings, all he gets is the dollar figure he put
in. Correct. Without interest, without anything. He gets his contributions back, period.
That's because he was not here 10 years?
Correct.
I thought you were vested at 5.
That's the general plan, general. And they've changed it to, is it 8 or 10 now? Or did they change it? Or
we haven't changed it. It's 5.
The city's, you was 5. FRS used to be 6. They changed that up. They raised that up to 10. I think they want to change it to 11. Ours has always, police and fire have always been 10.
Mm.
So you're not vested until you're here for 10 years.
Mm.
Disability pension, they get their money back?
No. No, if they go out on disability, they get a monthly benefit.
I read that disability thing until I went to sleep. one thing I didn't see in there, maybe it's in there somewhere I didn't get to. How about sickness?
Yeah, we, I mean, you had mentioned that at the last meeting. I saw it in the meetings. We don't have anybody go out from being sick.
Well, so about 90% of disabilities are illness, not accident.
Well, but heart disease is what everybody goes out under.
Well, that's an illness.
Okay, well, then, yeah, that's what they're going out under is the heart and lung bill, no, which is...
According to the law, that's a service-connected disability that is not an illness. Heart and lung is not an illness.
Okay.
It's a service-connected disability.
Yeah.
Ask Klausner.
Right. Yeah, because the police have what's called a presumption that if you come down with tuberculosis or high blood pressure or heart disease, that's presumed to have happened in the line of duty. And when you go out on disability, you have 3 things that you have to prove. You have to prove totality, that you're totally disabled, permanency, that you're not likely to recover from that disability, and you have to prove that it's in the line of duty, that it happened, that illness or that disability happened in the line of duty. Well, with the heart and lung bill, that took that third aspect out, because if you come down with heart disease, it's already, according to law, it's presumed that it happened in the line of duty.
Any provision for partial disabilities?
No.
Wow.
Not in the fire plan. It's either full-blown or none at all. Now, with workers' comp, there is partial and percentages and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but with our plan, it's there's no kind of partial disability. You're either fully disabled, you know, totally and permanently, or you're not disabled, one or the other.
That's all I had. I just wanted to... just revisit, just keep on the table the queue I mean, obviously, the core real estate continues to, you know, chug along nicely, and the valuations still remain pretty attractive. So I just want to put it out on the table, if the UBSQ is still in the billions. It's a question of opportunity cost. You know, with the Invesco REIT is doing nicely right now, but that's our most volatile real estate piece there. So I just, again, want to continue to throw out for discussion, is there any interest or not in maybe re-upping or re-looking at some of the other alternatives that you know, we had talked about before. Several of the other managers are and have been making regular capital calls, and their performance has been, you know, right up there, top quartile.
Do you have any other clients that have chose Cornerstone?
Yes.
And how are they doing?
And the results so far, Cornerstone's results are
right in line,
very consistent.
Actually,
they've outperformed American Realty marginally this year. And yeah, so I just want to put that out there. I hate for us to be waiting. You know, it's a tough decision. UBS is a mega fund. They are mega properties, you know, their queue is still in the billions.
It's a guy in Omaha, Nebraska, that has a great effect on the marketplace, who last month bought $10 billion worth of IBM stock. He now owns 10.6% of IBM. I think he'll get on the board, by the way. But Buffett and also Forbes leans very much towards international companies for the next 5 years. And this appears to be what Buffett's doing with this fund.
That's where all the growth is. You know, all your growth is in the BRIC countries, and you know, they need the technology and they need all this stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, but hopefully we can produce it and stay on top as far as innovating and then sell it. That's what we need to do.
All the earnings from these companies we invest in, are the dividends / interest automatically reinvested with them?
Everything is being paid out. So if you're asking, you know, you check the box for the funds, for the mutual funds.
It gets reinvested.
To reinvest or to get paid out. And I believe these are all...
Well, I think all of ours are reinvested. It automatically goes right
That's
back
good.
Into the fund.
Okay.
Now, the exception is, let's see, the American Realty... I think we reinvested American Realty...
We don't want to be touching that as long as we can afford to pay for all these expenses out of income.
Yes, well, I mean, per our previous conversation, the plan's cash flow positive even before income earnings and net of expenses. So, John, I don't know if you knew off the top of your head, but the general plan must have some poor real estate. Are they in JP Morgan?
UBS. They're in UBS.
Yeah, they're
but
in
they've
UBS.
Been in.
Yes.
Yeah, they've been in.
Are they in JP Morgan or Morgan Stanley?
I don't know about
that.
I think
more than
one? At least two.
We do.
And maybe even more.
I'm not sure. I just got rid of my UBS stock.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, though, with UBS. I mean, when they came in here, when we interviewed the real estate guys, the guy at the head who was selling the UBS was pretty down. He said, we're kind of like a separate entity, but we're under that UBS umbrella, and we would like to take that UBS umbrella and throw it in the garbage heap. He spoke very negatively about his parent company.
Doesn't instill a lot of confidence, does it?
Well, it does and it doesn't. I mean, he was just stating the fact that because a lot of times what these companies will do, like these money managers and so forth, for instance, yourself, if you were CEO of a big money management company, you know, and you're ready to retire, you sell off to a big conglomerate, you keep your core people, and they continue to do all the investments and everything, but you're just under that bigger umbrella. That way you walk away with a whole great huge wad of cash, and you don't have to sell it and kind of hold the note, per se, because these big companies can afford to buy you out and give you cash money. And if you hold the note and these clowns that you leave the company to go down, you know, you've just lost everything you built up your entire life. So that's why a lot of these people, a lot of these managers will go into these, go under the same umbrella, but they keep their independence. And in fact, they won't go under the umbrella unless it's written into the documents that they keep their somewhat of their independence. So, but yeah, that's as I remember, that's what the UBS guy was saying. He was very because somebody, Mike, I think Grennan was on the board at the time, and he had mentioned it, and he was
it's a broker. Because the attorneys go, they're walking by the street, there's a crime being committed in that building every day.
Dave, the general plan has UBS and Long Wharf Real Estate Partners.
Okay.
The other one.
Okay. I was just asking because some of the other ones we looked at originally included J.P. Morgan and Morgan Stanley, but they had high asset minimum.
Right.
And if by chance the other plan was in one of those two, we've gotten them to
do that. Because I was hoping we could be under the same umbrella as UBS, because as I understand it, you can put more into UBS, but you have to already be in. And because the general plan was in, I was hoping we could get under theirs, but I was told no.
Actually, they signed their contract back in 08, and they haven't pulled up all of what they've committed yet. There for a while, it was stagnant for about 16 months. They didn't pull up anything. So they've just started again.
Okay. So,
but not very often.
Yeah, Cornerstone, of the eligible candidates that we interviewed previously, Cornerstone would be one, and their capital call experience of late has been no more than two quarters. Usually it's been one quarter. Actually, pretty much all of the majors at this point, with UBS being the exception, have been calling.
What about the global REITs? Do you think that they're, because they've been at the bottom, do you think they're going to stay reasonable? Or
about which one, I'm sorry?
Global REITs, or Invesco Global REITs.
I think our concern... I think the issue we were trying to tackle with the Invesco Global REITs was not so much looking for a turnaround in that management of that product, but might we take the money from the global REIT area,
put it into a core,
and get something that's a little more stable without leaving income on the table, and providing better diversification.
Right.
Because if you recall, when equities, in a normal bear market, when equities, you know, crash, typically real estate, you know, stays steady, and they operate on different cycles. But since this is, these are REITs, if you recall our conversations, they move right in lockstep with equity, so we're just not getting the diversification benefit from it. So
really need to be careful about these REITs. Really need to keep watch on those people. I've had some horrible experiences.
Yeah. I mean, it's the asset, the space is arguably just as volatile as regular equities.
They go out there and they start building shopping centers and stuff like that. Look out.
Yeah, none of the managers that we interviewed or that were on our list were into development, new development. And I think maybe one or two, some of the bigger funds were, but it was very, very limited. Cornerstone is not.
Good.
American Realty is not.
one of my issues then, if none of them are really making any capital calls, even if we hire them, is there an...
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying, they are.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Some of these others are?
Yeah, we've, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Cornerstone, American has been one of the slower ones, but, you know, we're getting in there. Another one was Intercontinental. They're kind of, I'm trying to run down the list of majors. They've all been, we've been getting capital calls from them on a regularly quarterly basis. So anyone, generally the experience had been that any capital pledges that were made a year ago have for the most part been invested by now. It's just, UBS just had such an exceptional backlog.
They were more diversified and they were really...
Well, and that, I think that mega trophy property space...
Yeah. And their fees were the lowest too.
Doesn't move that much.
Right.
So, although I understand that John Hancock building in Boston was on the courthouse steps, and I don't know if they were bidding for that. And what was the other? There's another one that just went up. I was building somewhere.
Hancock building is when all the windows fell out.
Oh, yeah, when it was built.
Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. There was another one that was on the courthouse steps, but other than a few of those, and I'm not sure there's that much property movement, so the opportunity is more limited.
Thick enough and more put in there, right? And they just kind of had a windshield.
So do you think we should enter this?
Speaking for the Bogdan Group, strategically we still think we should be fully invested to the extent we can be in that real estate area. And just trying to think ahead, if the Fed says rates, and we had a discussion this morning, that the Fed says rates are going to stay fixed until 14 now, right? But if we get a recovery, at some point rates start going up, then the total return of the bond portfolio, especially in the index fund, since you have a lot of treasuries in the index, is going to start to
dwindle
and could even potentially turn negative. So real estate is typically the beneficiary of that environment when, you know, things get negative for bonds with interest rates. That's when real estate, it's a later cycle performer. So that's when real estate typically performs well, and we're getting substantially more income right now from real estate, a lot more income than we're getting on the 10-year treasury bond. But so, you know, I think you would view it as a step two in the cycle of things, if and when that day comes. And, you know, that's the other reason we've been wrong, but we've been deferring the TIPS investment because they were just so expensive. They're a negative yield.
Yeah.
And rates have stayed stubbornly low here, and TIPS have stayed stubbornly, exceptionally expensive.
Yes.
So our investments in bonds will likely continue to be favorable as long as the Feds keep their interest rates at where they are.
Well, and I think the more accurate way to state it would be as long as the bond market thinks the Fed is correct in keeping interest rates low. The bond market will decide where rates need to go, and the, you know, the Fed, you know, they can fix the Fed funds rate wherever they want, but if the bond market thinks the economy's starting to take off, then the market's going to sell off and interest rates are going to go up. There's nothing the Fed can do about it. So that's the issue.
In the last year, TIPS have made 13.6%.
Yeah.
But you're right, that's high. That's the highest of anything, and that's not the time to buy on the type low.
Yeah, and, you know, candidly, I think everybody, maybe not, everybody's a strong term, but I think everybody, with maybe some exceptions, were anticipating rates at least staying flat, if not rising.
So if you had tips now, would it be the time to sell?
For clients that had gone into tips previously, like to UBS, you know, when it was attractive, it's been a rebalancing because tips have gone over their allocation amount. So yes, it's been reducing tips, and you know, strategically, it looks like, you know, if you're going to be active, it might be a good time to go to a halfway to tip. It's looked like a good time to go halfway to tips for the last eight months.
Okay.
But we'll continue to watch that, believe me.
Okay.
So is it time to spin off bonds?
You can't. As a fiduciary,
we can't spend totally off.
Yeah, we can't.
I'm sorry, totally, no.
Yeah, we still need that. We still need that allocation because in the end, we don't know. And we're more often wrong than right. And thank goodness we had the bonds and are managing this program with that in mind, that we really don't know. So we want an all-weather portfolio that's going to do the best possible under all scenarios. So I would say the current bond allocation is appropriate, notwithstanding the opportunity to add tips to it at
some point.
To me, the issue would be the REIT real estate allocation. That volatility is still out there, and we just can't get that money because that is our source, our agreed source of funds for the UBS fund, but we just can't move it. Unfortunately, it's done very well, but that's out there. So, you know, that's why I just wanted to bring up.
Normally preferred stocks act just about like a bond, but you can get some robo-advice on preferred stocks now. GE now is paying 3.5% on their preferred stock.
Yeah. So I wanted to put that put that out there. I think I gave you the short answer first, right? That I think it makes sense to be invested sooner than later in the real estate.
Do you want to bring? Can you redo that search of the last ones, or if you put any new ones at our next meeting? I think that's appropriate.
Sure. Yeah.
Take another look at them in May.
Yep. Kind of quick. Why don't we do that?
Okay. And we'll do that, and you can bring the updated version of what the real estate managers were, and if you want to contact them and see if they're taking money right now and how much they would take, and you know, so, and then we can look at it in May at our May meeting.
Okay, we'll set that up. All right, that's all I have. Thank you.
I'd like to entertain a motion to accept the accounts payable as presented.
So moved.
Motion by Estrada, second by Fred. Any opposition to a unanimous approval? Seeing and hearing none, the motion carries. Actuarial report. I spoke with our actuary this morning, and I'm waiting for his call. Any minute now, he's going to call me and tell me that it's ready, and he's going to shoot it to me electronically, and then he will send some hard copies over the mail. So they will be in, hopefully within hours.
Any problems at all?
No, he didn't mention any problems. So they will be here shortly. And the question is, and I'll work with him, is do we want to have a special meeting in order to go over the actuarial report? He said he could maybe do that in the second week in March or sometime in February. Or since we already have the report, city will have all the numbers that they need to have, whether we should just postpone it until our May 6th or 7th meeting. That way, we don't have to have a special meeting just to go over something that we already, know. So I will, I'll get with him and we'll make a decision, and we'll either have a special meeting or we'll just put it off until our May meeting. We have the school coming up in Fort Lauderdale that I believe we're all going to close next conference. And that's coming up. So we're all set for that, all reservations and everything for that. And there's also a school in Tallahassee. It's the annual school that they have every year. This year, that will be May the 14th through the 16th. So if anybody wants to put that on their calendar. And the other issue with this plan and the other two plans is the Gabriel Roeder and Smith overview of all three plans. I would like to get a copy of that report.
There is no report. February 17th will be a workshop. During that workshop, Jim Rizzo and Jim Lund will be kind of high altitude.
Okay, are they going to give, are they going to do, is there going to be any kind of presentation?
There'll be a presentation.
Paper presentation?
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to get a copy of that before the meeting so at least I can go over and look at it.
They're working on that right now.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about, what unfunded liability is, what funding ratio is, educate the council so they have an understanding. Mm-hmm. And then probably come back in about 3 or 4 weeks after that and talk specifics about, ways to possibly reduce, plan, try to get an idea of, really try to educate council. I'd be willing to bet a lot of them don't know maybe what's the difference between the defined contribution plan, the defined benefit plan, what an unfunded liability is, what the funding ratio means and stuff. So this would give them that idea.
Education.
Yeah, but I would imagine in that plan they'll talk a little bit about what the, I've sent them the actual reports for police and general funds, general pensions, so I'm assuming they'll use some of those numbers, the latest numbers, and talk about that, and talk about what other cities have done, talk about moves to, freeze plans and FRS and contribution plans. And so it's going to set that stage, I think, as an educational thing.
That'll be just on the pension? I'm sorry, general pension?
No,
on the 17th, they're all free?
All.
Oh, I understood. Incorrectly then, I thought you had indicated at one point to council that it would be just the general plan coming forward.
I don't recall making that, but...
I think the general plan is in the most trouble, but financially, but it's going to be for all three plans. Okay, does anyone else have anything? One other thing, Wells Fargo, we're going to do the separate accounts for each money man. I know now we have like two accounts or three accounts, and a lot of them are lumped into one account. A lot of those mutual funds are lumped into one account. Mm-hmm. Well, I got with Carl and I told him I wanted separate account numbers for each manager. So it'll be a lot easier, especially for Alicia at year end, to figure out the dividends and all that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned you got them to do that without any additional fees.
Yes, it is without any additional fees.
Kind of unusual, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's in the process. I haven't heard back from him, so I told him how to. I pulled that he wanted to know how we wanted them labeled or something. So I pulled this up and I just put them right off of this. The abbreviations and everything. That's all I have. Does anybody else have any questions or comments or issues they would like to bring up?
I will have travel checks on the 15th. So we can close there. That's only May of March. I could probably go ahead and do this.
House Bill 365 and Senate Bill 910 dealing with police and fire pensions has legs and has been moving through committee after committee this session. so I wanted you all to be aware of that. Are you aware with what House Bill 365 and Senate Bill 910 do? Well, a number of things, but they address the use of the premium tax insurance proceeds. Those bills talk about changing the disability presumption, and also make some changes to some transparency issues. In other words, it puts requirements on pension boards to be more transparent, details of which are to be worked out at this point. And also gives cities and special fire districts more control over changing pension funds in cities, terminating plans, changing to new plans. So I thought you should all be aware of that.
Yeah, there's one of them too about the funded ratio, which I doubt is going to, I don't think it's going to go through.
Which one is that, do you remember?
It's
80%, yeah.
Yeah, if you're under 80%, then you're automatically considered, it's automatic, then you have X amount of days to negotiate with the labor unions mm-hmm. or with the employee groups to figure out how you're going to get to 80% funded immediately, and if not, then that's going to be considered a financial urgency, and then if it's considered a financial urgency, then the cities are allowed to do whatever they want anyways. So,
Does the state of Florida put any money in our pension plan?
Yes.
Yes.
Through the...
It's through insurance. Every property... Property insurance. Yeah, every property insurance in the state and city limits of Ocala, they pay it. It's not an additional tax,
no.
But it's a credit that they get, that the insurance companies get.
Well, that whole disability thing is the strangest thing I've ever read.
Where do we put that money, by the way? The insurance premium tax on
it? It goes right in with all the other money.
To pay for the plan or to pay for new benefits?
Money goes in, but the...
It's all in the plan.
But you
it's just
use
accounted
that
for
separately. You can't use that money right now unless you're going to provide the benefits.
Right, but where is... But the money is accumulating interest.
Correct.
Okay.
It's called me go with all the other funds.
Okay, so that's what I meant by when I mentioned the insurance premiums tax
yeah.
a minute ago. Right now, the law says that it has to be used for new benefits, not paying for old benefits or ones that have been previously established, only new or additional or extra benefits. That's what the law says. And this legislation proposes to eliminate that provision and allow those monies to be used for general purposes of the plan. Like maybe reducing the unfunded obligation.
How did the state get involved in our pension plan in the first place?
The state's been involved since the 30s through this IPT, this insurance premium tax.
Lobbyists many years ago.
Yeah, well, what happened was, you know.
In various forms has made its appearance up there for the past 20 years.
Right.
Right.
The very same dialogue you'll see. Every time.
Yeah.
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 What happened was back years ago, they decided that they didn't need 65-year-old firefighters and 65-year-old police officers. So what they did is they came up with a way of doing an insurance premium tax on all taxes on property insurance in the city of Ocala are considered 175 monies, and then we get a tiny, tiny proportion of the taxes going to Tallahassee, and then we get that extra money to what it was originally done for was to reduce police and fire's ages, because we didn't want 65-year-old police officers, 65-year-old, and that was a way to help fund the pension plans to allow police high-risk police officers and firefighters to retire 10 years earlier, so their normal retirement ages are 55 instead of 65. And then with police 185 money, all the taxes collected on automobile insurance go to the police fund, and all on property insurance go to the fire department. And that's how it was, and that's how it was, and that's how it stayed for many years. And what a lot of the states are coming, are having problems with, is that everybody else wanted into that same pool. And they extended it to corrections officers, and then they extended it to the coroner's office, and then the investigators. You know, they said, well, we're high risk too, we want in, we want in. And then it went to the people washing laundry, and the prisons were saying, well, we have to deal with their nasty sheets and everything, so we're high risk, we want in that, you know. And what happened is one class after another, through lobbying and through unions and through all these other techniques, a lot of people got into a high-risk pool who really don't belong there, and it's just raised the cost of the pension plans astronomically. So, you know, that's what happened. That's how the state got involved.
So when they say benefits, you know, even the existing one is not necessarily named pension. You know that, right?
Say that again?
Because those monies are funding other programs, believe me. 175 money runs the educational comp program.
Right. There's only so much money that we can get, and it's a percentage. And if we bring in more money than that, then it goes back to Tallahassee, and it's used if I should get a degree, you know, in fire science.
But it's $10.
Yeah. If I should get it, it's $110 a year.
Used to be, I don't know what it is now.
Well, if I get a degree in fire science, then the state's going to pay me, because the state feels that an educated firefighter is better than a non-educated. So if I get a degree in fire science, then I get $110 a year from the state. So, and it goes to fund other things besides
fire science,
the pensions.
Fire science, any degree that assists you with the performance of your job.
Right. So, but yeah, it's been there every year. I mean, they've been going after that 99-1 money every single year since Jeb Bush signed the law back in 99.
Right.
And they haven't gotten it yet, but that's not to say that they won't. So, okay.
Who's going to the Fort Lauderdale trip?
All four of us.
Good.
Please contact all of you at the end of the month, end of this month. I'll have everything ready for you.
You know, the further I get into this public sector pension plan business, the more I'm amazed as how it differs from the private sector. I don't know of any corporate pension plan that takes their disability payments out of their pension plan. In fact, they're prohibited from doing so.
Right.
And their disability benefits are so much better than the public sector. It's not even funny. I'll blow your mind here right now.
Sir?
I come out of a plan that when I went in, it was contributory, right?
Right.
I was in a plan for 10 years, and all of a sudden it's non-contributory. We got to that dream state that you were talking about earlier. We got to that state where we had all this money in investments.
Right.
We had a pile of bucks there.
Right.
We stopped contributing.
Right.
We didn't have to pay anymore.
Right.
But we also have 15,000 members. Not only that, if you went out on disability, you got all your contributions back.
Wow.
Because that pension became workman's comp. It wasn't taxable. You got all your money back. And that included people that went out in non-service connected disabilities. They also got their money back, and it also became workman's comp. How? I don't know.
Right.
A lot of stuff went on there I don't know about. But.
It was created about 80% of the fire department
got
out on disability.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's what
New York Police Department.
I'm hoping. I hope they're successful.
I'm retiring on disability also.
Very successful on that, because I don't. And that's sort of.
You know, the big difference between individual...
Okay, with no further business for the board, it's 2:30, the meeting is adjourned.
Individual, the income you get is tax-free. Property is taxable income.
Really?
Yeah. Big difference.